Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Public Advocate. I am your hostess. My name is Sally L. Cordy, and I am going to be interviewing Sean Siegel, host of the radio program The Vaccine Myth, A Matter of Trust. Now, Sean has written an article that I thought, wow, I'm doing interviews right now about why should we have a national moratorium on vaccination. And when I read what he wrote, I thought, well, this is the perfect answer to this question. We're going to be talking about a lot of things, but quite frankly, I'm going to ask him to start with all of the really well-researched. This is a scholarly piece, again, by Sean Siegel. Start with that, and then we'll talk about other things, but it's kind of important that we cover it. Okay, I'm going to pick up Sean Siegel right now. Welcome, Sean.
Oh, hi, Sally. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, I was enthused by your article on disinformation. And if you would define that, you close the article with the definition of disinformation.
Disinformation is critical information purposefully withheld. That's how I define it in the article. It's actually worse than that. It's almost disinformation, if you will, because these people know. I'm not religious, but we could call it evil. These people know that there is critical information out there that every parent who is vaccinating would want to know and must know. To even begin to honor the ethical tenet of informed consent, but the information is quite obviously purposefully withheld. The information is denied across the board. And if you want, we can go through the article issue by issue.
I would very much like that, Sean. That would be perfect. And I have to tell you, you know, when I write to legislators, which is, you know, I do frequently, they get back to me with what I call those same old tired lies. Well, what you have written really dispels the disinfo, and I find this kind of critical that they read what you've written or hear this interview, because we just cannot allow this disinfo to continue. We can't get to the next step if it does.
Totally agreed. And by the way, okay. I mean, we won't go into the reference links here. I didn't put them in that article. I put them you took from I believe my Facebook page, and very kindly turned into a PDF, by the way. But that article actually was published several years back on vaccinationcouncil.org. It was the first article I ever wrote, and if you access it there, you will find all the relevant links to each one of those little issues. And
I'll put that in the comment area after the show. People who are watching, when you go to, let's say you're on Facebook and you see this this radio program, click on the link to it so it opens it up. Underneath is the transcript and the link to Sean's radio program as well. It's at vaccinationmyth.com, but if you scroll down to the comment area, I will also add the vaccinationcouncil.org link that Sean is referring to. Okay, go, Sean. I want the world to know what you have to say.
Okay, well, it starts out saying we are living in the age of disinformed consent. Parents assume their doctors and their public health authorities, so-called, are providing them with all relevant vaccine information, and nothing could be further from the truth. And obviously, if vaccines can kill and can cause serious, debilitating, lifelong damage, which they can and do, and I'll throw this in right here, that anybody interested, and I would hope that would be everybody, can go to Health and Human Services, just look it up, their vaccine injury table. And just as, for instance, the MMR vaccine alone is listed on that table as a cause of brain inflammation, brain damage, allergic reaction, anaphylactic shock, which is an extremely severe, potentially fatal allergic reaction, chronic arthritis. Who would think of a vaccine as being related to arthritis? But it is. And the last one they have issued is, listed rather, is ITP, idiopathic thrombocytopenic purpura, a word with which, unfortunately, I have become familiar. And that is a serious blood platelet disorder. It's an autoimmune disorder. And it's called purpura because it ultimately turns the body purple because of the accumulation of blood clots internally. This is just a hint of the damage that vaccines do, and they are always careful to include in those reactions any sequelae, any further reactions due to the initial reactions, and they include death. So again, obviously, if vaccines can kill and cause serious and debilitating lifelong damage, the vaccine administrator must provide that information to the client in unambiguous fashion, regardless of the estimated size of the risk. It doesn't make any difference whether one child has been shown conclusively to die from a vaccine or 1 million. The parent needs to know and be told face-to-face that that is a possibility and that the doctor has no way of accurately predicting whether your child with the very next vaccine will be the one to succumb. It's an ethical
Could I interrupt here? Because a vaccine abbreviates your lifespan. This is never addressed. The fact that whatever your expected lifespan is, because of all the reactions, the known reactions, your lifespan is actually abbreviated. So my sister, for example, died at 23. She was severely mentally retarded from a vaccination, but she died at 23.
Right. Oh, without a doubt. I mean, certainly. I mean, the vaccines are, especially with the numbers given, but and we'll get to that in a little while, but yeah, they degrade the health. They, at the very least they do is degrade the health. A vaccine is a very untoward procedure. And we can get into that in a little while. That's really getting down to the foundation. But let's continue with this. And this is important. The ethical mandate of appropriate informed consent must be fulfilled, but it never is. There's a fundamental reason. Medical schools don't teach the history and nature of vaccine damage and death, nor do nursing and pharmacy schools. Yet doctors, nurses, and these days pharmacists are the very ones who administer vaccines and upon whom we rely for full information. Somewhere there is made a conscious decision to exclude the reality of serious vaccine damage from the curricula. And this is really getting down to the nitty-gritty as far as culpability goes, Sally. That's where it starts. Doctors are certainly culpable. That's the most troubling issue of trust that I've ever dealt with in the over 4 years of the show now, is where the rubber meets the road, if you will. It's where the pediatrician's syringe meets the child's arm. Doctors are behind the eight ball to start out with. Now, what responsibility they have to research for themselves once being made aware of vaccine damage is a whole separate ethical question and moral question. But they are behind the eight ball. They are given no information about the nature of vaccine damage or how to recognize it in medical school, despite all the damage that we know all too well is being done by these solutions, these brews of toxic chemicals. So that's where the culpability. There are people out there who are establishing those curricula, and they know full well, at some level they have to know full well about all the dangers of vaccines, but they do not tell the medical students or the nursing students or the pharmacy students. That's the first issue. Most of the many doctors who have witnessed vaccine damage, thankfully not all, lack the professional integrity to follow up with curiosity, let alone research. This is the most troubling of the array of vaccine contradictions. Trained to observe, they nevertheless appear blind to even the possibility of causal relation. And really, we're speaking to a cognitive dissonance on the part of MDs that surpasses the cognitive dissonance of the general public, because their profession is rooted in it. There's a reason the CDC did not announce to the American public in 1999 the direct correlation between the amount of mercury in vaccines and the incidence of speech and learning disorders and autism it found in its own in-house study, a conscious, intolerable decision to withhold critical information. And as we know, Sally, they went to great lengths to withhold that information. They spent 2 years reformatting the data that came in that study to where they watered it down to statistical insignificance, watered down specifically the correlation between the mercury in the thimerosal in the vaccines and those problems with speech and learning disorders and autism. So they were diligent, but they were diligent in exactly the opposite fashion than they're supposed to be diligent, to fulfill their obligation to the public they supposedly serve. There's a reason Dr. Vera Scheibner's cot watch studies, which decades ago found a compelling link between vaccinations given to infants and the incidence of cot death, which was what SIDS is called in Australia, is never mentioned by public health officials, a conscious decision to cover up the correlation. And how critical is that to be told that, hey, by the way, 30 years ago, there were studies out there that showed a direct correlation between the incidence of SIDS and these repeated bouts of respiratory distress that apparently takes place in infants post-vaccination.
Which her husband had designed a machine to monitor, and I understand that had been destroyed, but they realized at full well, and they published it. I want to bring up the picture you sent to me about the lion cub. Would you please address that at this juncture?
The lions?
Well, you were saying they sleep on their backs, on their sides, on their tummies. And often they're saying that it's the way in which the child sleeps that is putting off their air. If you would address that.
I will. Actually, it started a few days ago. There was an article that was indeed put up about pediatricians saying that you should be lying your babies on the back. And the picture that was attendant was indeed a beautiful little baby lying on his back in the crib in his bedroom, and talked about being their backs. And so I created a little article that went with it that said National Geographic, and this, of course, obviously was false, National Geographic has sent two researchers to Tanzania because there seems to have been, starting early this year, a problem with the lion prides, that the numbers are kind of reducing. And after conversations with pediatric experts, they figured that, well, these lionesses are not lying their cubs on their backs like they're supposed to, and they went in to train a lioness. They were going to pick out a lioness, teach her how to put her cubs on their backs before they go to sleep during nap time or bedtime, and that way enhance the survival of their cubs. An obviously absurd proposition, but it makes the point that you can go to any animal, that they can sleep in any position. It's got nothing to do with their health. And so I came out again yesterday, and when I found that picture, and the picture is wonderful. It's a mama lion, the lion is lying on her side. Her cubs are about, they must be 5 or 6 months old, and they're literally sitting on her, lying on her, all different directions. And what it says is that the researchers found the lion, but after monitoring her for a couple of days, they realized that these cubs were lying in every which way fashion, and it didn't affect them at all. And they started thinking, well, what's the difference between these lions and humans whose infants seem to be regularly or routinely dying, supposedly inexplicably, and I'm talking about SIDS, of course, and that those deaths reportedly are diminished by lying your child on the back. And so the researchers said, when we saw this, our objective suddenly changed. We started researching, and we realized ultimately that it's the vaccinations that are the difference. And this imaginary researcher says, do you know what the ingredients, have you read the ingredients in the vaccines? That we're injecting a volley of toxins into our newborn babies, infants, and toddlers. What should we expect except neurological damage? And yes, as a result, there's respiratory distress caused, and placing, therefore, the infants on their stomachs can be catastrophic. But it's not really the position that's the problem, it's the vaccines.
Right.
And that's pretty much what that picture says.
That every few years they seem to change their mind about which way the child should lie. I mean, for a while it was the fashion to lay them on their stomach, other times on their sides, now on their back. It's the vaccine. So lay your child any which way you please, it's the vaccine.
Right. And yes, we know that there's respiratory distress for whatever reason. Vaccines very quickly affect respiration, probably just from the shock. The fact is that those toxins simply should not be injected. They shouldn't exist at all. Nowhere in nature are you going to encounter mercury. You're not going to be eating mercury unless it's, you know, as we know, tuna fish, yada, yada. We know about all that stuff. But any kind of routine, significant, natural, I mean, the mercury that it's found is because of unnatural circumstances, is because of runoff in other areas, and then the fish are contaminated. It's not natural. The fish are contaminated. So it's bad enough that when you eat it, but as we know full well, and as Marcy Piper-Terry says so well, they think we're so stupid that we don't know the difference between injection and ingestion. And there's all the difference in the world. And just one example, it doesn't cover every particular scenario, but it covers quite a few of them. I can lead you to zoological sites that will tell you that you can swallow snake venom, and it may or may not make you sick, but it won't kill you. It may not do anything. But inject snake venom, and we all know what can happen. There's
well, I'm
basic.
Glad you brought that up, because there's E. coli and the two new vaccines for meningitis. They just added two meningitis vaccines to the schedule. We're up to 76 now, recommended by the CDC through the age of 18. In New York, they have passed these two additional vaccines. But there are five meningitis vaccines. One has mercury, the other one has aluminum. But the two new ones have E. coli. They are saying this is the new adjuvant. This is poison in the blood. People will definitely die if this is used. So when they mandated the vaccines, I don't know if these two new vaccines as of 2015 or if it's the other ones, but I certainly know of an immense amount of distress from the old ones. This can't be an improvement. It never is an improvement. And since when is E. coli an adjuvant? Come on.
Yes, preposterous. You know, all you have to do is, and I say it as though it's easy, and it's not. It is for me now, 8 years after I started researching vaccines, but is to remove yourself from the fear of the associated illnesses, from the fear of measles, from the fear of mumps, from the fear of a bout with the flu. And then, if you can, soberly consider the wisdom of injecting known neurotoxins into your babies. And
right.
Yeah, and your knee-jerk reaction is the right one. Your gut reaction is the right one.
Our guts are completely messed up from these vaccines on top of it, and the gut is such an essential part of your overall wellness. But let us get back to your list, because I don't want to deviate to the point that we don't cover it.
Right. Okay. Well, the point of all that was that, yes, there's serious and common respiratory distress in infants after vaccination. The next issue, there's a reason the CDC, and of course this is the one that really spurred me into the research. There's a reason the CDC never mentioned that it was the radical changes they made to the definition and diagnosis of polio right after the Salk vaccine was introduced that automatically eliminated 90% of subsequent diagnoses, not the vaccine. And that's 30,000 cases a year, Sally, that they automatically eliminated, 30,000 a year, just by making those changes. They sit up in their offices in Atlanta controlling public perception with the points of their pens. The reason, obviously, a conscious decision to steer, to control public perception, create the illusion of vaccine effectiveness, and motivate the uptake of all vaccines. Nor did they mention that once the vaccine was licensed, the CDC pulled all remaining diagnoses close to the vest. Before the vaccine, local public health entities, I believe doctors, could send a diagnosis in for national record keeping, and it would simply be listed as polio. As soon as the vaccine came out, along with these definition changes, the CDC suddenly said, you guys can't officially record a case of polio anymore. You have to send it to us. And we're the only ones who can do the lab analyses and make the final decision. And, of course, if you trust the CDC after the definition changes they made, well, then I've got a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you.
What do they call it when you adjust fat? They call it doctoring the information.
It's just insanity. Well, let's continue on. There's a reason that concomitant with, and this is incredible, there's a reason that concomitant with the diagnostic and labeling changes to polio, they made a radical change to the definition of a polio epidemic, from 20 cases in 100,000 to 35, cutting, practically speaking, in half the likelihood that any subsequent outbreaks would be labeled epidemics. A seemingly haphazard. How do you make that change?
Well,
overnight.
I want to address that because they adjust it to their purpose. For example, the H1N1 flu shot, I heard that in order to call a pandemic to get everyone vaccinated, I heard there only need be one case of it. So if you want to talk about adjusting statistics to suit your purposes.
Yeah, they're excellent at changing definitions and requirements, and it severely affects public perception. And the people in between who know that, Sally, and the doctors who are making all the diagnoses, the other public health entities who are reporting it, they're all aware. They know that the definitions and the protocols changed overnight, but they never say a word about it. More disinformation,
right.
In essence, right?
Yeah.
So
you know what I call disinformation? Deliberate misinformation. I've been correcting people who say misinformation for years, and I say, no, it's disinformation, which means, in my book, deliberate misinformation.
Right. Yeah, that's why I said at the beginning of the interview that, it's actually disinformation.
It's
worse than disinformation, you know.
Yeah. You said it in a different way, and I'm just thrilled that you're saying it, you know, and I like the way that you defined it as well. Okay, goodbye. I mean, go on.
Okay. So they changed the definition of a polio epidemic. I mean, they didn't leave a stone unturned. There's a reason the mainstream media in general will give no meaningful column space to the truthful information about vaccine pitfalls and dangers, the conscious decision of the publishers, motivated at least in part by the influence of pharmaceutical industry advertising dollars, a breach of the public trust. And I will also add that I believe starting in the 50s and 60s, slowly but surely members of the Council of Foreign Relations were seated on the executive boards of all the major communications companies, TV stations, radio stations, etc. And they have an influence as well. There's a reason the vaccine industry will not discuss the fact that for years, and this one, it pisses me off so bad. There is a reason the vaccine industry will not discuss the fact that for years, adjuvants like those used in most vaccines have been injected into lab animals purposefully to trigger rheumatoid arthritis and other autoimmune diseases. A conscious decision to keep the public ignorant of the ethical dilemma of then recommending their use for injection into newborn babies, infants, and toddlers as a macabre trade-off for acute temporary illnesses. And by the way, immunologists have established this same adjuvantal effect in humans as well. There's a reason the many doctors and scientists who have spoken out publicly against vaccines have been branded quacks by the mainstream. Obviously, a conscious campaign to maintain the myth of vaccine safety and effectiveness. There's a reason that the AAP...
I would like your next article to include the word macabre in the title, because this is just a perfect word for what's happening. I mean, truly it is. You'll have 15 minutes left just so you can space your remarks.
Let me continue here. There's a reason the AAP over the last three decades has been sliding down the hellhole of castigation of parents who refuse vaccines. Initially, we're talking a few decades ago, espousing acceptance to occasionally now endorsing statements labeling such parents as irresponsible and a threat to the vaccinating masses. A reason they provide vaccine refusal documentation for parent signature that speaks not a whit to the potentially catastrophic consequences of vaccinating, despite, again, being well aware of the record. A conscious decision to obfuscate, a conscious decision to misrepresent. These people are flat-out lying to us. There's a reason Dr. Paul Offit of the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia personally reviewed and approved for publication on the website of the hospital an article on the value of the chickenpox vaccine that states literally that the shot is perfectly safe, despite the post-marketing reports of reactions like anaphylactic shock, encephalitis, Guillain-Barré, and despite the availability of the VAERS record. A conscious decision to misrepresent, to falsify the safety of the vaccine. And, yeah, I tried to take him to task with the medical board in Pennsylvania, and not unexpectedly with no luck. There's a reason that nowhere in the mainstream have we seen mention the fact that when the team of doctors at the Royal Free Hospital in London treated the 12 Lancet kids for their bowel inflammation, their symptoms of autism were greatly alleviated. A dynamic and heartening bit of information that should have been trumpeted in headlines globally. A conscious decision to support the claim that there is no connection between the MMR vaccine, the novel bowel syndrome described by the team, and autism. There's a reason the vaccine industry will not respond to the disclosure that among the 50,000 unvaccinated clients of Home First Health Clinic in Chicago, the staff is aware of only a few cases of autism and virtually no asthma, allergies, or diabetes. Poignant statistics all with obvious staggering implications, since in the general population of the same size, we'd expect to see several hundred cases of autism or more and thousands of incidents of the other mentioned autoimmune disorders. Likewise, there's a reason CDC doctors appear before a congressional committee on autism, ostensibly so ill-prepared to answer direct, obviously relevant questions as to be hostile, and in such repeated fashion over the years that in the days of old, they'd have been booted out for contempt, tarred and feathered by the thousands of parents who have watched helplessly as their kids took their obvious first steps down the road of developmental regression to ultimate diagnosis of autism, immediately following a round of vaccinations, an obvious conscious directive to remain obtuse and non-responsive. And
I would like to stop you there. Colleen Boyle was sworn in 1912 when she addressed the Oversight Committee. And information regarding the CDC whistleblower has come out that she was instrumental in misrepresenting. So where is the legal ramification for this conduct? And subsequently, Margaret Schuchat has come out and lied blatantly to the Senate. I don't know if she was sworn in, but I do know that Colleen Boyle was. How can, you know, we know Colleen Boyle is onto the issue of the MMR vaccine and autism from the CDC whistleblower. We don't have proof that Margaret Schuchat knew better, but certainly as the prominent person from the CDC addressing the Senate, one would imagine she's got a clue.
Well, I mean, you're right. These people are all culpable. They should be indicted and tried to start with, have about crimes against humanity. I mean, when you think about the fact that all this damage is being done, and it's, you know, it is everywhere. The percentage of the very, very serious ones is, relatively speaking, low, but it's still thousands and tens of thousands of kids, and there are millions in between who are experiencing the same symptoms as we know, Sally, but to a lesser degree, a lesser severity. I mean, just because there are a large group of kids who are very severely affected is no reason to think that there aren't an astronomically greater number of kids who are similarly affected but to a lesser degree. It's not always immediate and catastrophically severe. Those kids are experiencing ADD, ADHD, as these relatively low weight, if you will, neurological problems and immunological problems within them are constantly distracting. They can't focus correctly. They can't concentrate. It ends up with learning disorders. And not every single one, but a tremendous amount of them are directly due to vaccines.
Well, I would like also to mention something that I read on a Facebook post by Ed Aranga of the Autism One Conference, who a couple of years ago had Posey, ISA, and former Congressperson Wendell speaking at this conference. And he, in this post, he said he asked one of them, and I don't know which one, he said a congressman, I presume it was a sitting congressperson, but can't say that for sure, why they will not basically admit the link between autism and vaccines. And that person said, and I completely agree, it should happen because it will shut down the government. That's how strong a statement she made, and that's how serious an issue this is.
Yeah, it is. And from that perspective, the government needs to be shut down.
Amen.
Well, let's get on to the last couple issues here. And, you know, I mean, I give me a minute and I could think of six more. And there's a reason the CDC will never respond to pleas to compare the health of the fully vaccinated against the never vaccinated. That they will claim it unethical to conduct a double-blind study because it'll supposedly deny the protection of the vaccine to the control group, when in reality that rationale is circular, since it's the very safety and effectiveness of the vaccines at question. And
right.
When all
that's such a great point. I love that point.
And when all that's really necessary, they don't have to do what they're suggesting has to be done. When all that's really necessary is to analyze the available data on the million or more Americans who are not vaccinated at all out of personal choice and compare it to the general population. It's a conscious decision to avoid revealing the truth. And my point
well,
is, they know the truth. They know the truth.
Right.
It's a conscious... Right.
Right, to avoid the truth. But I contend there are millions of vaccinated versus unvaccinated studies. In every pediatrician's office, there's a study. In every household with a vaccinated child, wherein they go on not to vaccinate the other children, there's
yes.
a study. So
absolutely.
There are just millions of studies out there to say that they can't do a study. They've already done them. They're just not reporting them.
Exactly. And they have been approached for over two decades now. I mean, the folks who... Mark Blacksoll and all the people that started the Age of Autism and other well-known and well-reputed vaccine awareness sites. Way back in the middle of the 90s, when they realized how much mercury, because it was the parents that dug the information out. And, of course, you have to wonder about how many of the researchers and scientists at the CDC and other public health entities were already aware of it anyway. But regardless, the parents dug it all out and revealed it. And begged the CDC to do a vax versus unvax study. And the CDC didn't even have the courtesy to say no. They just totally stonewalled them.
The insurance companies have done a vaccinated versus unvaccinated study. Let's see how much they're being requested for reimbursement by the unvaccinated families versus the vaccinated families.
Right, but they're making money off those reimbursements. You know, I wondered about that for a long time too. But I think that's what it comes down to. That's what they do. They're actuaries. They figure out all the risks and the profits, and they're making money off the sick people by the insurance rates.
Well, yeah, good point. Great point. But the fact
so,
that
so they're
they
in the same
done, they have done a
moral.
Study. They have done a study regardless, you know.
Well,
all these studies are available if we will look at them, or if anyone will talk about it.
Yeah. Well, let me finish the last sentence of that paragraph. The reason that they won't do the study: a conscious decision to avoid revealing the truth that the overall health of the unvaccinated is markedly better than the vaccinated, and indeed. There is a record of that in every pediatrician's office, and there are dozens of informal studies, some of them as many as 15,000 people responded. I can't think of his name right now. He's a friend, but he's in New Zealand, I think, and he Germany. Almost came to mind. But 15,000 people responded in English. He had another 5,000 respond in German, vaccinated versus unvaccinated, and using all the markers you would think, cases of asthma, cases of neurological disorders, just how many times a child was ill, all the factors that we would think would be included. And, again, the health of the unvaccinated is markedly better. I read a...
Sean, you and I are conducting a study with every interview. You realize that? because I know I have come out with statistics that have resulted from interviewing hundreds of parents of vaccinated children. I have basically the scientific assessment. I have interviewed so many people. I have deduced certain things about the MMR vaccine and about the HPV vaccine, Freedom Barrels in particular, on that. But the thing is, you can only talk to so many parents about their ill children and not deduce a pattern, you know? So you, too, have interviewed a multitude of people who deal in vaccine injury, and I'm sure you have assessed certain results as well.
Yeah, yes, I can make some certain generalizations, but the most important one is that every vaccine should be avoided. I'll tell you what I'll get to in just a second. Let's go ahead and finish up the article. There's a conclusion down here. I've already read all the issues, but I concluded it with the behavior of the vaccine industry, government, manufacturers, much of the medical establishment, and the mainstream media, devoid of investigative journalism when it comes to vaccines, is reprehensible. Their calling cards are statistical manipulation, deception, and fear. Well aware of the catastrophic damage done by vaccines, they steadfastly deny the reality and suppress the information while knowing it is essential to every parent's vaccine decisions. Conscious denial of critical information is disinformation.
Right, and there should be a price to be paid while our children are falling like flies. And I cannot even look at, I don't look in the eyes of children anymore because I see that dull expression. There is no sparkle of intelligence left among our children who are vaccinated. It is so tragic, and I can best express this by saying, I saw a woman with a stroller, and of course I approach every woman with a stroller. I never let anyone get by me. And unless I have a throng of people coming at me at once, you know. But I said to the woman, I can't catch up to you. Could you please stop? I'm trying to give you information. And she whirls around, and her child, who I would normally completely avoid looking at, I couldn't avoid it. She was sparkling. Her eyes were sparkling with intelligence. And I said, Madam, your child's eyes are sparkling with intelligence. And her response was, she's never been vaccinated. And I said to her, did you know why I was approaching you? I thought that was amazing. And then I said, well, you must not be from America. And she said, no. And the short version of that interaction is, your child is sparkling with intelligence. You must not be from America. That's the short version.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, and coincidentally, when I mentioned that article that I wrote about the Tanzanian researchers, they discovered that the lions' cubs can, or the lionesses' cubs can lie any which way they want, and they're in fine health, and they realize ultimately that vaccines are the problem, and the last little mention in that fake news article is. The man turns to the wife and says, I don't think we'll be going back to the United States. And he smiles at her while he's saying it. And yeah, we kind of reach the same conclusion. I mean, it's horrendous. Though I don't know where you can go. I mean, this program is being implemented globally, slowly but surely. It's being implemented.
And it's a well-known fact that children cannot benefit from immunization other than mother's milk in their first year of life, and through 12 months, the CDC is recommending 37 doses. I want to thank you very much, Sean Siegel, for coming on this program and imparting this extremely important scholarly research. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.